Today in The Ripple Effect, we are discussing a shift in American education that is being framed as practical, necessary, and overdue, yet rarely examined in terms of what it replaces. The conversation is usually presented as a correction, a move away from an over-reliance on college degrees and towards something more grounded in real-world skills. On its surface, that argument holds weight. The country does need electricians, HVAC technicians, mechanics, and builders, and for a long time, those roles were treated as secondary to white-collar work, even though everyday life depends on them functioning properly. What makes this moment different is not the recognition of trades as valuable, but the way the broader idea of education is being repositioned. The message has shifted from expanding options to quietly redefining what counts as worthwhile learning. College is no longer presented as a general pathway to opportunity. Instead, it is increasingly evaluated based on whether it leads directly to a job, and more specifically, whether that job justifies the cost of the degree. In that framing, education becomes a transaction, measured in inputs and outputs, rather than a process that develops how a person thinks over time. That shift did not appear without cause. The cost of higher education has risen to a point where many families and students are forced to think in strictly financial terms. Tuition, fees, and living expenses have created a system where the risk is no longer abstract. People graduate with debt that shapes their decisions for years, sometimes decades, which changes how they evaluate the value of what they studied. When a degree does not lead to stable employment, the frustration is not theoretical. It shows up in monthly payments, delayed home ownership, and limited flexibility in career choices. In response, policymakers, institutions, and media narratives have leaned into alternatives that promise a clearer, faster return. At the same time, the language surrounding different fields of study has started to narrow. Programs tied to engineering, technology, and healthcare are treated as practical investments, while disciplines like history, philosophy, literature, and political science are often grouped together as less useful, even though their purpose was never to provide direct job training. These fields were built around developing reasoning, interpretation, and the ability to engage with complex ideas, which are harder to measure in immediate economic terms, but play a role in how individuals understand systems, institutions, and decision-making. As that distinction becomes more pronounced, the structure of the conversation begins to change. Training, which focuses on specific skills for specific roles, is elevated because it produces visible, short-term outcomes. Education, which operates over a longer timeline and shapes how people process information, becomes harder to defend in a system that increasingly demands immediate results. The two are not interchangeable, even though they are often discussed as if they are simply different versions of the same goal. This is not an argument against trades or against practical skills. A functioning society depends on both, and there is nothing inherently lesser about work that builds or maintains the physical environment. The question is whether the current direction is creating a balance between developing skilled workers and cultivating informed critical thinkers, or whether it is gradually shifting expectations in a way that narrows what education is supposed to accomplish. That distinction matters because the effects of educational priorities do not stay confined to the workforce. They extend into how people interpret information, how they understand policy, and how they engage with institutions that shape their daily lives. When the emphasis moves toward efficiency and immediate application, it can change not only what people learn, but how they approach problems that do not have clear, immediate solutions. The conversation is often framed as a correction to a broken system, which is partly true. However, focusing only on the failures of the previous model risks overlooking what might be lost in the transition. If education becomes defined primarily by its ability to produce job-ready outcomes, then forms of learning that develop broader analytical capacity may continue to lose ground, not because they lack value, but because that value is harder to quantify in the short term. The shift from education toward training does not happen in isolation. and it does not come from a single decision or policy. It builds through overlapping pressures, economic, political, and institutional, that slowly reshape how value is assigned to different forms of knowledge. When those pressures align, the result is not an abrupt change, but a gradual redefinition of what the system rewards and what it begins to treat as optional. At the economic level, the argument for trades and skill-based pathways is reinforced by labor shortages that are easy to measure and difficult to ignore. Construction projects stall without workers, infrastructure ages without maintenance, and entire sectors begin to feel the strain when there are not enough trained professionals to meet demand. In that context, promoting trades is not just ideological. It addresses a real imbalance in the labor market. Employers need workers who can step into roles quickly, and training programs are structured to meet that need with a level of efficiency that traditional academic pathways often cannot match. At the same time, higher education has struggled to maintain trust. Rising costs have not been matched by consistent outcomes, and the gap between expectation and reality has created skepticism that extends beyond individual experiences. Families that once viewed college as a stable investment now approach it with caution, and that caution influences how institutions position themselves. Universities expand career-focused programs, emphasize job placement statistics, and increasingly align their messaging with workforce demands, which pulls them closer to the logic of training, even when their broader mission has historically included more than that. Political framing adds another layer. Education policy is often discussed in terms of workforce readiness, economic competitiveness, and return on investment, which narrows the conversation to measurable outcomes. Funding decisions follow that logic, prioritizing programs that demonstrate direct links to employment. Over time, this approach creates incentives that favor fields with clear economic outputs while placing others in a position where they must justify their existence in terms that do not fully capture their purpose. The language of policy begins to mirror the language of markets, and once that alignment takes hold, it becomes difficult to separate the idea of education from the idea of production. Cultural perception reinforces these shifts in ways that are less formal, but equally influential. Students make decisions based not only on cost, but on what they believe will be respected, secure, and sustainable. When certain degrees are consistently framed as risky or impractical, enrollment patterns begin to reflect that narrative. Departments shrink, course offerings narrow, and institutions adjust accordingly, which then feeds back into the perception that those areas were never essential to begin with. The cycle is not driven by a single actor. It is maintained by a shared set of assumptions that continue to reinforce themselves. Within this environment, the distinction between training and education becomes more than semantic. Training is designed around known outcomes. It prepares individuals to perform defined tasks within established systems, and it does so with a focus on efficiency and precision. Education, particularly in its broader forms, operates differently. It introduces ambiguity, encourages interpretation, and develops the ability to connect ideas across contexts that are not immediately related. Those outcomes are less predictable and less easily measured, which makes them harder to defend in a system that prioritizes clarity and speed. The tension between these approaches does not necessarily produce conflict in obvious ways, but it does shape long-term direction. When resources, attention, and validation flow more consistently toward training-based models, the broader educational mission begins to contract, even if no one explicitly calls for that outcome. Programs that do not align with immediate workforce needs must adapt, reframe themselves, or accept a reduced role within the institution. What makes this dynamic difficult to assess is that each individual decision appears reasonable on its own. Addressing labor shortages, reducing student debt, and improving job placement are all practical goals. However, when those goals dominate the conversation, they begin to crowd out other considerations that are less visible but still significant. The system becomes more efficient in producing workers, but it may become less effective in cultivating the kind of thinking that allows individuals to navigate complex social, political, and historical realities. This does not suggest a coordinated effort to diminish education, but it does point to a structural shift in priorities. When the value of learning is increasingly tied to immediate application, the broader purposes of education are not eliminated. They are simply given less space to operate. Over time, that reallocation of space can reshape not only institutions, but the expectations people carry with them when they decide what education is for and what it should provide. Any argument about education has to pass through the numbers at some point, because this shift is not happening in theory. It shows up in enrollment patterns, completion rates, earnings, and long-term mobility. The data does not point in a single direction, which is part of why the conversation feels unsettled. Some metrics support the move towards skills and trades, while others suggest that pulling away from broader education comes with costs that are less immediate but still measurable over time. Enrollment trends tell part of the story. Over the last decade, traditional four-year college enrollment has declined in several periods, particularly following the pandemic, while short-term credential programs, certifications, and community college pathways tied to specific industries have seen renewed interest. Trade programs, apprenticeships, and technical certifications have also gained attention, driven in part by employer demand and by students looking for faster entry into the workforce. These changes are often presented as evidence that people are making more practical choices, and in some cases, that is accurate. At the same time, completion rates and outcomes vary widely depending on the path taken. Four-year degrees still correlate with higher lifetime earnings on average, even after accounting for rising tuition costs, but those averages mask significant variation based on field of study, institution, and geographic location. A degree in engineering or healthcare tends to produce a different financial trajectory than a degree in a field without a direct pipeline to employment. That gap has become more visible, which influences how students and families evaluate risk. Short-term training programs and trade pathways can offer strong early earnings, particularly in fields where demand is high and supply is limited. An electrician or HVAC technician can enter the workforce more quickly, often with less debt, and begin earning at a level that competes with or exceeds entry-level white-collar salaries. However, long-term earnings growth in some of these fields may plateau earlier than in professions that require advanced degrees, and physical demands can limit career longevity, which complicates the comparison over a full working life. Debt plays a central role in how these decisions are made. Student loan balances have reached levels that affect not only individual finances, but broader economic behavior, influencing home ownership, family planning, and career flexibility. When education is financed through debt, the question of return becomes unavoidable. Training programs and certifications are often structured to minimize that burden, which makes them appealing in a system where financial risk is increasingly visible. Another layer that often gets overlooked is how different forms of education affect adaptability. Labor markets change, industries evolve, and jobs that exist today may not exist in the same form a decade from now. Broad-based education, particularly in fields that emphasize analysis and communication, can provide a level of flexibility that allows individuals to shift across roles and industries. Training programs, by design, are more focused, which can be an advantage in stable fields, but may require additional retraining when conditions change. International comparisons add further context. In global assessments of student performance, the United States has faced challenges in areas like math and science relative to other developed countries, which has raised concerns about competitiveness. At the same time, the U.S. higher education system remains influential, attracting international students and producing research that shapes multiple industries. These competing realities make it difficult to draw simple conclusions about whether the system is failing or evolving. Access and outcomes also differ across demographic groups, which complicates any broad narrative about what works. Some communities have historically relied on higher education as a primary pathway to upward mobility, particularly when other avenues were limited. Changes in how education is valued can affect those pathways in uneven ways, depending on how new opportunities are distributed and who is positioned to take advantage of them. Taken together, the data does not support a clear-cut argument that one path is universally better than the other. Instead, it highlights trade-offs that operate on different timelines. Training can provide faster entry into the workforce and reduce immediate financial risk, while broader education can support long-term mobility and adaptability, even if the benefits are less visible at the outset. The challenge is that current discussions often emphasize the short-term advantages because they are easier to quantify, which can shift attention away from outcomes that develop more gradually, but still shape how individuals and societies function over time. When these shifts move out of reports and policy language and into everyday decisions, they start to take on a different shape. They show up in conversations between parents and their kids, in guidance counselor offices, in how schools structure their programs, and in the quiet adjustments people make based on what they believe is realistic. The framing of education changes how people approach it long before they ever enroll in a program or apply for a job. A student deciding what to do after high school is not weighing abstract ideas about intellectual development. They are looking at cost, time, and the likelihood of stability. If one path offers a quicker paycheck with less debt, it carries a certain clarity that is hard to ignore, especially for families that do not have a financial cushion. In that context, choosing a trade or a certification is not just practical, it can feel necessary. The pressure is not coming from ideology, it is coming from the need to avoid risk. That same pressure shapes how institutions present themselves. Colleges that once emphasized exploration now highlight career pipelines, partnerships with employers, and job placement rates. Liberal arts departments reframe their value in terms of transferable skills, which is an attempt to translate something broader into a language that aligns with current expectations. Technical programs, meanwhile, are built around speed and efficiency, offering defined outcomes that can be marketed with a level of certainty that broader education cannot easily match. Employers play a role in reinforcing these patterns. Job postings increasingly focus on specific competencies, certifications, or prior experience, sometimes removing degree requirements altogether while still relying on networks and referrals behind the scenes. In some cases, this opens doors for individuals who might not have pursued a traditional degree. In others, it shifts the burden onto applicants to navigate a system where expectations are less standardized, which can make outcomes more dependent on access to information and connections. Over time, these individual decisions begin to influence the structure of the workforce itself. A larger share of workers enter fields through training programs that are closely tied to current market needs, which can improve efficiency in the short term. However, when fewer people are exposed to broader forms of education, the collective skill set begins to narrow in ways that are not immediately visible. The system becomes better at producing specialists, but it may become less balanced in developing people who can move between roles, interpret complex information, or engage with issues that extend beyond their immediate field. Civic life is one area where these effects can surface. Understanding how policies are formed, how institutions operate, and how historical context shapes current decisions requires a type of engagement that is not always built into training-focused pathways. That does not mean individuals in trades or technical fields lack awareness or interest, but the structure of their education may not prioritize those areas in the same way. As a result, the responsibility for developing that understanding shifts away from formal education and becomes more dependent on individual initiative. There are also generational implications. Younger students are entering a system where the expectations are already different from what existed a decade or two ago. They are told to be strategic, to avoid unnecessary debt, and to focus on outcomes that can be measured early. Those are reasonable pieces of advice, but they also shape how people define success and how they approach learning. If the primary goal becomes securing a stable position as quickly as possible, there is less space for exploration, even when that exploration could lead to different forms of growth. None of these changes operate in isolation, and none of them are inherently negative on their own. The challenge comes from how they interact. When economic pressure, institutional incentives, and cultural perception all point in the same direction, they create a momentum that is difficult to slow or redirect. By the time the effects are fully visible, they are embedded in how the system functions, and adjusting course requires more than a simple policy change. What begins as a series of practical decisions gradually shapes a broader environment where certain types of learning are emphasized and others become less central. That shift does not eliminate the value of education in its broader sense, but it does change how often people encounter it and how necessary it appears within the paths that are most accessible. Looking across all of this, the shift is not defined by a single policy change or a single argument about what education should be. It is the result of multiple systems moving in the same direction at the same time, each responding to pressures that are real on their own. Rising costs pushed families to question the value of degrees. Labor shortages pushed employers and policymakers to prioritize skills that could be deployed quickly. Institutions adjusted their messaging to stay relevant. And over time, those adjustments began to reinforce each other. The difficulty is that each step in that process makes sense when viewed individually, which is why the larger pattern is easy to miss. Addressing debt is reasonable. Expanding access to trades is necessary. Aligning education with employment outcomes is practical. None of those ideas are inherently problematic. The question is, what happens when they become the dominant framework for defining what education is supposed to do? Because that framework tends to narrow the scope of what is considered valuable. If the purpose of education is defined primarily through employment, then fields that do not produce immediate measurable outcomes will continue to lose ground, not because they fail to contribute, but because their contributions operate on a different timeline. That timeline is harder to measure, which makes it harder to defend in policy discussions and public debate. Over time, the absence of those fields does not show up as a sudden loss. It appears gradually in how people interpret information, how they engage with institutions, and how they make sense of complex issues that do not have clear answers. From a structural standpoint, this raises a set of forward-looking questions that are less about choosing between trades and college and more about how the system balances competing priorities. Who is most affected by this shift is not limited to students making immediate decisions. It extends to communities that have historically relied on education as a pathway to mobility, particularly when other avenues were limited or inconsistent. When the definition of valuable education changes, the impact is not evenly distributed because access to networks, information, and alternative opportunities varies across different groups. What is being reshaped is not simply the education system, but the relationship between learning and opportunity. Training programs provide a direct connection to employment, which can reduce uncertainty in the short term. Broader education provides tools for navigating uncertainty over a longer period, which is less visible but still significant. The balance between those approaches influences not only individual outcomes, but the overall capacity of the workforce to adapt as conditions change. When this shift is taking place, it is not tied to a single moment, but to a period of sustained adjustment that accelerated after economic shocks, including the financial crisis and the pandemic. Those events exposed weaknesses in existing systems and increased the urgency to find alternatives that could produce more immediate results. Where the effects are most visible varies. They appear in enrollment trends, in how institutions allocate resources, in how employers define qualifications, and in how public discussions frame the value of different types of knowledge. They also appear in less measurable ways, such as how individuals approach learning outside of formal settings and how they interpret the role of education in their lives. Why this is happening is tied to the convergence of economic pressure, institutional incentives, and cultural perception. Each factor reinforces the others, creating a feedback loop that gradually shifts expectations. There is no single driver, which makes the process harder to attribute to intent, but the outcome still reflects a consistent direction. How this continues to unfold will depend on whether the system can maintain a balance between producing skilled workers and developing individuals who can think across contexts. If that balance narrows too far in one direction, the consequences may not be immediate, but they will shape how future generations engage with a world that is unlikely to become simpler or more predictable. The conversation often returns to whether college is worth it or whether trades should be prioritized. But those questions operate at the surface level. The deeper issue is how a society defines the purpose of education in the first place and whether that definition leaves room for both practical skill and broader understanding to coexist without one being treated as expendable.